When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Treehouse, episode 44. What's the deal? With Danny Baker and me, Louise Pepper.
Good morning, everybody. A tremendous good morning to you, Louise. And here we go again. Another 2 hours of fun for old and young without the slightest hint of vulgarity. As usual, there is much to discuss, but it's a beautiful morning. The snails on the thorn, the lark on the wing, and in some distant field, a gardener is playing a harmonica. Everything's for the best in this best of all possible worlds. So, Peps, I'm going to go straight at you now.
Oh,
what are we doing today?
Oh, I know.
I saw you resting your chin on your hand, and I thought I'm going to put a depth charge under that co-host.
I had at least a few Amazon reviews. And
I've got plenty. I'll tell you what it is. I looked on my usual, as you know, the first 5 minutes of this show are some people's favourites. Not many, but some people look forward to the rather odd roundup of on this day because it's not like other programs. But I looked, and today it's thin. It was thin. I'll tell you, it was very thin. It was a. Did I write them down? Yes, I think I did. One minute. Here we go. Hold on, everyone. Here we go. I wrote down some of the things, and then just. No, that's not it. Hold on 1 second.
If you can't polish up a bit of gold from them, it must be thin.
No, it was all the Accord of so-and-so was in 1856, and America concluded its the trade deals with Mexico. And I was looking down it. There was a couple. I think Madame Bechamel, who gave us the sauce.
For which we thank.
She got married today. But I just couldn't get going on it until, boom, bang, there it was. Snagglepuss was first broadcast on this day in 1959. Now, way before your time, Pep, but are you aware of Snagglepuss?
I have heard of Snagglepuss. I believe I might have seen a picture. It's a very ragged, ratty-looking thing.
A little ragged and ratty. I'll have you know that Snagglepuss is actually a pink cougar. No, there you go, if you will. And only ever wore a large white collar and a bootlace tie, but later was given cuffs. And a lot of Hanna-Barbera.
The cartoon. Who was I thinking of? I was thinking of a real animated thing.
It is an animated thing.
I mean like an animatronic.
Snagglepuss had a tremendous voice. It was a very.
Was he the one that was a bit like the Pink Panther?
I think you'll find it's the other way around. I think you'll find that is like saying, Roxy Music, a bit like Queen. He was the original, and he had some tremendous catchphrases. In fact, if you go, we'll start the show any second now, everyone. But if you go, as I do, to Wikipedia and look up things like Snagglepuss, the gravitas that's brought to it, whoever's writing it is a genius because it is done completely. Here we go. So Snagglepuss. Snagglepuss has three signature catchphrases. His most famous is the perpetual exclamation, "Heavens and Murgatroyd, Betsy even." He used to put the word even at the end of things a lot. Snagglepuss tends to put the word even for emphasis at the ends of his sentences, emphasising a previous statement. Somebody got hurt in dire pain even. You see, if it weren't first generation Snagglepuss, this won't mean anything, but it's never stopped us before. Sometimes after stating a synonymous phrase. On account of this, I must be a little rusty, stale even. did. He used to restate what he had just said. It's grammatically correct, although the order of the sentence, "I wonder if she knows my telephone number even," would sometimes grate. Simply added as an exclamation, heaven to Murgatroyd, a veritable Franken-mouse monster even. And it carries on and on, giving us far too much detail about Snagglepuss. But Snagglepuss jumped out of Yogi Bear.
Oh, okay, right. Now I'm with you.
See, you should have gone straight to the menu. And once you get into Yogi Bear, then, because Yogi Bear, as a kid, picnic basket, boo-boo. And we'll get down to the heavy news in a minute. So, Yogi Bear, when I was a kid, I had no idea what the name Yogi Bear meant, did you?
Well, am I supposed to?
Yeah, but well, in America, it was a big gag because one of the most famous baseball players in America was called Yogi Berra. That was his name.
Oh, gosh.
I know.
Okay, right.
I found that only about 10, 15 years ago. Yogi Berra was a household name in America.
So, having a... Fred Berry or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly,
that. Yeah.
Well, exactly that. Yes, exactly yeah. that. And he tried to sue at first for defamation until he found out everyone loved Yogi Bear. But again, you go to Wikipedia, and yes, we could have looked at the treaties of Mexico and America being signed in 1826, but you go to Wikipedia and look up Yogi Bear, and there is plenty there. Again, always done with a straight face. The plot of most Yogi Bear cartoons centers on his antics at the fictional Jellystone Park, a variation of the real Yellowstone Park.
I was about 20 when I realized that.
Exactly, me too. Yogi, accompanied by his constant companion Boo Boo, would often try to steal picnic baskets from campers in the park, much to the displeasure of Park Ranger Smith. Now, I don't remember him being called Smith, but there you go. It says, besides speaking in rhyme, Yogi Bear had a number of catchphrases, including his pet name for picnic baskets, picnic baskets, his favourite self-promotion, I am smarter than the average bear, although this often overstates his own cleverness. One last bit. Another characteristic of Yogi was his deep fluctuating voice. He often greets the ranger with a cordial, hello, Mr. Ranger, sir, and hey there, boo-boo, which is his preferred greeting to his sidekick. Yogi would often use puns in his speech and had a habit of pronouncing large words with a long vocal flourish. Now, here's the bit I thought, what? Yogi's girlfriend, Cindy Bear, sometimes appeared and usually disapproved of Yogi's antics. I don't remember Cindy Bear, do you, perhaps?
I don't remember him speaking in rhyme either, so I obviously didn't pay any attention at all. He's gone.
And as we mentioned earlier, the Snagglepuss just wore a large white collar with a bootlace tie, and then was given cuffs much later in the series. But Yogi, of course, had a green straw hat, a collar, and a tie. Most Hanna-Barbera cartoons were given these accoutrements. Pixie and Dixie, you know, I think Pixie
Your
was
face.
The... Pixie and Dixie. Pixie the bow tie, Dixie the waistcoat, and Mr. Jinx. So you won't know that, Mr. Jinx.
No.
I hate those Mises to pieces. That was Mr. Jinx.
Ah.
You came in with the Hair Bear Bunch, which is, you know, like discovering pop music around the time of Blue Mercedes. It was all before that. It was all before. And now, Peps, what are we doing today?
Number one, monsters and illnesses your parents made up.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, don't talk to me about fruit. Number three, not being believed. Number four, why buy a baby that? Number five, your best and worst dreams, be succinct.
Thank you very much. And also we have had additions to the song that came to me in a dream, in a reverie. We've had some additions to that, and so you'll all look forward to that. But give us something from over there, Peps.
Well, this is actually being killed by a coconut, which you covered on the last one.
We're opening with a death story?
No. It's a survival story.
It's a bit Norwegian
story,
black
worry.
Metal, isn't it? Okay, but to continue.
Phil tries to squeeze
them
in.
Yes, our producer does try to get as many terrible injury and death stories into the show, but we are good gatekeepers. Continue, Peps.
I refer to your topic being killed by a coconut. My very good friend, Hugh Stephen Bobbin, was taking a brief holiday in Mombasa. Just to help you appreciate the type of man Hugh is, if you recollect the episode in Fools and Horses where Del Boy is in Miami, and as he is attempted to be shot, bends down and the bullet goes through the back of the chair, this could be Hugh Stephen Bobbin.
Oh.
Anyway, one day at the hotel in Mombasa, he took a stroll in the lush grounds, and as he walked through reception, a staff member urged him to be cautious as the coconuts were ripe and to look out for them if in the vicinity of aforementioned coconut tree. He treated this advice with due diligence to the extent that whilst looking up, he felt an excruciating pain in his ankle. As he looked down, he saw the latter half of a green snake disappearing into the undergrowth. He had the composure to stand still and shout for help, and upon explaining to the ground staff what had occurred and a description of the snake, he was carried upright through reception and placed mostly upright in a taxi. The hospital in Mombasa is, by his description, quite close to the hotel, and by the time he reached it, he was in a coma. 2 days later, he was informed upon regaining consciousness that the anti-serum had been administered and he would survive. He had been bitten by a green mamba snake, and of the last 100 people bitten, only 12 survived.
No.
It was only his close proximity to the hospital and the serum that his life was saved. And thus, how Hugh Stephen Bobbin, a nicer man you could not wish to meet, was almost killed by a coconut.
How about that? Man, I didn't know you were supposed to stand dead still after you're bitten.
No, or upright.
And he was bitten by a
green mamba.
A mamba in Mombasa?
Yes.
In Bermondsey, when I was growing up, down by the railway arches was a very snubby little street where mainly there were breakers' yards down it and nefarious goods going on. It was less than 100 yards long, the street, but it was always cars up on bricks down there and whatever the arches did, and foul, noxious gases coming out of them. And that, perhaps, was named Mombasa Street.
Oh,
and
how fancy.
There was huge gap between the wonder and the exotic name of the street and the actual thing that went on down there. It's still there, Mombasa Street. I remember saying to me, Mum, what's Mombasa? She, oh, it's wonderful. It's out there near Hawaii. It may be. I say that roughly about me, Mum. I couldn't put my finger on a map and say, there's Mombasa. This is a made-up monsters. We asked her for made-up monsters and ailments, the screaming ab-dabs, the collie wobbles, and any other monsters that are perhaps unique to your family. And this is from a Johnny in New York. After all these years, I still
impressed.
I still defer to any coming in from around the world. It says, in the 60s, my dad would take my family, my mum, my two sisters and me, on driving holidays in Europe. One year, our destination was Holland. There seemed to be a lot of roadworks as we drove through the country, often with large signs warning of Tegel niggers. This, I discovered later in life, meant oncoming traffic. But my dad at the time told us that Tegenliggers were dangerous Dutch monsters, but not to worry, because he had brought along some Tegenligger guns. These turned out to be drinking straws, and as long as we blew vigorously through our straws every time we saw the Tegenligger sign, our family would be safe. We never did see a Tegenligger. Those guns must have really worked. That's from Johnny in New York. Oh, well done, Dad.
That's a parenting goals.
Isn't that beautiful? Any of those you got, please? Oh. Something else, perhaps.
This is from, where's his name gone? Peter. I've lost. Oh, there he is, Pete. Listening to the podcast, you had a couple of stories, one about sledging on top of another human and another about having a video recorder stolen. And I have experienced both those things during the same event.
Oh.
15 years ago, I was a police officer in one of Scotland's larger cities and had been patrolling a particular area. And we had had torrential rain for most of the day. I was on the verge of finishing up when the radio crackled into life and a member of the public had reported someone wearing a blue jacket and carrying a rucksack who was breaking into a flat. I was only a few streets away, so thought I would explore slightly further afield to see if I could find the culprit as they made good their escape. As the rain stopped and the sun came out and I passed a park, I spotted some street drinkers on a bench talking to someone in a blue jacket with a rucksack over their shoulder. Parking the car and using trees to hide my presence, I advanced on the target, looking like a particularly rubbish ninja as I tiptoed tree to tree. As I approached their side, wholly undetected, I realised I knew the young man with the rucksack, and at this point in his life, he'd become particularly adept at redistributing other people's wealth.
Oh.
And we had met in professional company. When I asked what was in the very heavy rucksack, he offered to show me, but as he took it off his shoulder, launched it full at my face before making off down a grassy hill.
Oh, and they knew each other.
Like a flash, I took off after him, quickly realising the ground was soft and very slippy, but by now I was committed. Realising I was only going to get one chance at catching this lad, I launched myself towards him. As I made contact, his legs collapsed like a pricked bladder, and I found myself sledging down a muddy hill on the back of another human. The journey only ended at the bottom of the hill, by which time my poor lift was uninjured but caked head to toe in thick mud and wet grass. Heading back to the path with my arrest, roundly laughed at by all and sundry, I was frankly shocked to see that the drinkers had stood guard over the rucksack, which, upon further investigation, did indeed contain a DVD player and other electrical items stolen. Okay, so it's not quite a video recorder, but it's still combined theft from a house with sledging on a human.
That is superb. Thank you very much for knitting those two together. As he says, street drinkers there. Little several gangs. Waterloo used to be quite a meeting place for it. In fact, there was a documentary in the late 70s, early 80s called, brutally, it was called Methers. It was called Methers, and the camera crew followed them around, which strikes in our modern sensibility as incredibly voyeuristic. But it did, and I recognised seven or eight of them, because I used to always be going through Waterloo for nearly a decade. And I thought, there's old Pete. But it turns out, of course, the only thing we know for sure about Pete is his name, not Pete. And there was a tremendous singer who did give a song on the sing. And every time I used to pass the singer, he would raise the very violet bottle of meths, which was, I don't think people drink meths so much anymore.
No, I think meth has a whole other meaning now.
Is it? Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. I've never seen Breaking Bad, but I understand. But meths was very much the absinthe of the lower classes. And he used to raise it to me in that telltale bottle and go to me, "This is the only truth." Always, every single time, "This is the only truth." Now, that's almost Tom Waitsian. So anyway, I cannot remember quite why we got into that, but the fellow mentioned
street drinkers.
Oh, he did. This is just a very brief one from Pete in Gloucester. And I like this. This is, and we asked it to be succinct. "Tell us your best and worst dreams." "I almost never dream," says Pete. "My wife dreams every night. One day she told me she had dreamt of me again, and told me she believes you dream of people who are important to you. That's why I turned up so much. Well, that very night, I dreamt of Venezuelan dictator Hugo Chavez." That's all. There is that theory. Did you ever have one of them books, Peps, that explains dreams?
Once again, I'm not delving.
No, because it's all hooey.
If it tell me it'll all mean the death of someone, or couldn't.
No, no, it doesn't. It says it was like an A to Z. It was quite a thick book. My sister had it. She went through a phase of that, and I used to look at it, and it would say owls. If you dream of owls, it would tell you everything that might be in your dream. And of course, after that, if you dream of owls, it usually means you have misplaced something, usually a shirt. And I think, okay, I haven't dreamt of owls, but I'll look out for that. It was a 1950s book, just the Dreams Explained, it was called. It's terrific. But absolutely, they said in the publishing office, "Ralph, you finished that Dreams book, but they're not supposed to do it. It's yours, Ralph. It's got to be done by 5 o'clock. Owls, can't find shirts." Peas probably means you like football. I don't know. It was the most, as the teenagers say, random thing. Hey, listen to this. Listen to this for a quote, Peps. You know Carl Sagan, right?
Carl Sagan. Love him, yes.
Yeah, it's one of the most soothing voices that was ever in broadcasting. He would, unlike myself and various others, he wouldn't run through a sentence. He would absolutely pore over every word and out in the space of the cosmos. And it just brought you right in. And I just read this quote from him the other day. It said, people these days, they say, are not reading anymore. But one glance at a book and you hear the voice of another person, someone perhaps dead for 1,000 years. To read is to voyage through time.
Oh,
plenty of spin on the ball there, wasn't there? Plenty.
Yeah, you're talking.
He did a program once where he confronted, Eric von Daniken, right? Eric von Daniken had don't make that face, Peps. Von Daniken, huge for a while, Chariot of the Gods he made his money out of, which, for all those people who like to think that we are we are stardust, we are golden, we are descended from spacemen.
Right.
And these various evidence he gave, so, you know, absolute, made a fortune out of it, but what a charlatan, to be fair. And he said, you know, the Nazgar Desert in Peru, I believe, where they have the lines in the desert that can't be explained. They go on for hundreds of miles.
Oh, yes, lines. Yes, yes.
And from the air, they can be seen as forming a monkey and a bee and things like this, you know. And von Daniken said, how could they do this? How could they do this there without guidance from above? In fact, what these are runways for ancient craft.
Ooh.
A very powerful argument. As a kid, you sit there. Well, when the Horizon, it was, they gave dear old Carl Sagan full rein on it. And he said, yeah, I've heard that. He said, but he never says there is mountain ranges all around where you can do it. And people, they were brilliant mathematicians. People like to think they were just like cavemen. They weren't. This was their calendar. A bee, a monkey, all of this spider. They knew exactly what they were doing. He said, but you don't even need that. Runways for intergalactic craft? What are they flying there? B-52s, Spitfires? You need a runway to come in on? It was such a brilliant dissection of it. Give us something over there, Peps.
Well, this is from, he just put David, but because I can nosy at his email address. David's surname is Izod. I-Z-O-D. That's an amazing surname, Izod.
Listen, for a long time, if people had looked at my email address and thought that's the name, Margaret Rutherford. You know, I used to be Margaret True. Rutherford at the BBC. But we did used to get quite a groundswell of people saying, dear Margaret. We did.
Can you pass this on to Danny?
Oh, no, could you via Alistair.
It was anyway. Her birthday yesterday, I think.
It was in the week. Yes, it was. Yes. The great woman's birthday. And there's a life. There is a life. So what do you got, Peps?
Well, this is about dreams again. He says, I'll keep this brief-ish because you said there's nouts so dull as others, but there's enough heft in this to catch your attention. We might need the ooh music. A couple of years after my first marriage broke up, I realised I was having the same dream every week. Essentially, I was back in an old room I had once long ago lived in, but I had paid no rent on it for months or years. Every time the same theory. Well, the room looked a bit different, some looked a bit different. The thrust of it was, why am I still here if I haven't paid rent? Why does my key work? Why is my stuff here? Etc, etc. I don't belong here, and yet I have the key. I should say at this point that the fact my first marriage broke up was entirely my fault and I carried a huge amount of guilt about it. However, in 2009, I remarried and in due course had my first child. And I came to realise after a while that I'd stopped having what I'd come to describe as my dream. Then, on my daughter's first birthday, I went to bed, drifted off, and here I was approaching the door of the building and here was the room I used to live in. Here we go, I thought. It's been a while. I'll put the key in the door, go in, etc., etc. This time, my key didn't work. I couldn't get in. I looked down and at my feet, a couple of suitcases, and attached to the cases, a tag in the handwriting of my first wife. You don't need to come here anymore.
No.
My daughter is 9 and I have never had the dream again.
Isn't that beautiful?
David!
Isn't that the fourth dimension closure? Did I say the dream that I wanted to get back inside? Because I sometimes used to do that. Don't do it anymore. Oh, I'm dreaming. And it was the moment I said that, because I told you, I jumped inside one of Bert from Mary Poppins' street paintings. I was in that land, that beautiful land where, you know, she sings It's a Jolly Holiday. And I thought, I'm having a dream, but I want it to continue. And the more I said that, the less energy.
Oh, you can never go back into it.
No, I did that. I should never acknowledge that. By the way, his name is Izod? Wasn't Izod, was it?
Izod.
Izod.
I-Z-O-D, because, like a made-up sort of wizard of some sort.
Because Eddie Izod, and I knew a director called Izod as well at London Weekend Television. Do you know what Izod means? How about that? Do you know what Izod?
Is it, and I can't recall at all.
It's the letter Z. The real name of the letter Z is an Izod. I don't know why the letter has to have another name, but it does. Izod is the proper name for the letter Z.
Oh, I'm going to start using that.
It is. So we're going to take a little break there now, but normally on a weekend, we come back with the Golden Shot vinyl game. But that's all over now. If you don't know why, listen to two shows ago where I like our correspondent being bitten by the Mombasa Mambo. Or was he dancing the Mombasa Mambo? I can't remember. But rather like our correspondent, I nearly died in the service of my duty. So it's not coming back. It's a great, great shame, I know. We had still had 10,700 and something records to get through, but it's not coming back. For those of you who are concerned, yes, I'm fine now. I may have to do another year.
What about me? I had to watch.
You did actually. You saw the visuals of my big old gut hanging in front of the built-in camera here. Didn't realise that. Hanging in front of the camera while I was grunting and groaning away. But that's that. It's a nice game, but until we can get a proper venue for it, like football, it is suspended. Now, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'll give you the latest lyrics. And thank you very much indeed for the I Live in the 70s song. Got an incredible email about a well-known personality germane to this show and stacks of others. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Jay Rayner, and I host the Out to Lunch podcast, where I take fabulous guests out for lunch and grill them to a turn. For now, whilst lockdown reigns supreme, we're staying in for lunch instead, and we've got great company. Fascinating people share only the best takeaways with me over webcam. Great food and insightful conversation with the likes of Gary Neville, Sharon Horgan, George Ezra, and Dieter Von Teese.
Have you ever had a cream pie in the face?
No! So if you, like me, enjoy food and are missing restaurants, subscribe to Out to Lunch with Jay Rayner, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. It's the Danny Baker Show, radiating out across the airwaves. Come the sunshine or the rain, come aboard the Danny train. We'll kick our slippers off and throw our cares away. What better thing to do than have a jolly jape or two? Don't touch that dial, there's nowhere else to go. Come and join a happy session, wave ta-ta to the recession on the Danny Baker Show.
Take it away, Danny.
And we're back, and I've got to tell you, not that we weren't hanging on every good word of the fantastic products you've been hearing about, but Peps revealed she got Snagglepuss confused with, who was it, Peps?
Hartley Hare.
Hartley Hare. Can you imagine such a travesty?
When I was going on about ratty, horrible-looking, creepy dolls.
It's like saying, what was that group, John Lennon and the Pacemakers? the gap there is huge, getting Pipkins mixed up with the great Heavens to Murgatroyd. By the way, Murgatroyd only strikes me now. Heavens to Murgatroyd. I believe Murgatroyd is mentioned in a Shakespeare play, but them writers of the Hanna-Barbera cartoons had a lot of fun, didn't they? Heavens to Murgatroyd. Apparently that's a quote from Shakespeare, but you're sitting at 6 years old watching it. Anyway, welcome back, everyone. Now, don't all panic, but that song I came up with in the shower on the last show. Yes,
only just got it out of my head.
It's underpowered. Catchy. It is intentionally sung in a very limp, not even Leonard Cohen way. It's sung in this kind of indifferent way, and I know it is. And I know it may not be everyone's sea of tea, but I'm stuck with it. It went like this. I'll only sing just a bit of it. I live in the 70s with Abba. Oh, now I can't even remember.
Oh.
I live in the 70s with lots of Mark Bolans and Brian Ferries. I live in the 70s, Viva 71. Anyway, we've got up to 1973. A lot of people now looking around at their device going, where did the show go? But thankfully, a lot of people got in touch. No, probably out of the way. A couple of people got in touch and said, I can put more flesh on those bones.
Oh,
so
yes.
Firstly, and this is brilliant from Phil. Phil got in touch and added these verses. Now, even if you don't care for the song, which somebody, of course, has set to music, and we'll bring you that next week. Even if you don't care for this, and it is, yes, it's sea shanty-esque. I know that. But this is what Phil has brought us, because I ran out of, I think I did lots of ABBA and lots of cheese, lots of Bowie and Brian Ferries, and there was another one I did. And anyway, he's picked up the baton here, and thank you very much, Phil. So this song is now well on its way to being an opus. Here we go. This is Phil for bringing us this. Don't fast forward. You know, it takes a minute. Here we go. I live in the 70s when I heard of four seasons and 3 degrees. I live in the 70s, viva 74. I live in the 70s with Elvis Costello and the Police. I live in the 70s, viva 75. I live in the 70s, the Isley Brothers sang Summer Breeze. I live in the 70s, viva 76. Now, I'm sorry I hiccup there, but I was so proud of his rhyming, the Isley Brothers sang Summer Breeze.
Very excited. Yes.
And just one more, David gets in touch, and David says, I live in the 70s, Steve Jones and Rotten's... I'm sorry, I did it wrong. Here we go. I live in the 70s, Steve Jones and Rotten's Obscenities. No, that don't work, does it? Just Steve Jones and Rotten's Obscenities. No, it don't.
Steve Jones and Leiden Obscenities.
That's it. Thank you, Peps. Here we go. I live in the 70s. Steve Jones and Leiden's Obscenities. I live in the 70s. Viva 76. This is a terrific song. A terrific song. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. A little rehearsal. Peps wouldn't have had to come to my aid there, but that's fine. It's like when Bowie used to lean on Mick Ronson's shoulder. That was all good. that's the song as it stands. And all we've got to do now is 77, 78, 79. And we may have a little twist as an 80s thing at the end. But that's where the song lies at the moment. What you got there, Peps?
What I've got here is a laptop that's saying it's low on power and I've got to plug it in. There we go.
Okay.
Have been dramatic because I disappeared mid-song.
I hope that everything we've done in this half so far remains, because it will give some idea. Leave it all in there, Phil Wilding, producer, because it gives some idea of the tidy-up job he has to do every single week. That's the show raw, in red in tooth and claw. Give us something, Peps.
This is from Muskie. This is What Have You Slept Through?
Mm-hmm.
I managed to invite myself on a basketball tour to Holland, Holland again, back in the 80s. My mate, a very good player, was a regular team member for Hull University and got me on the tour. I was and still am pretty rubbish, but they let me on court for a few minutes. Mm. All the students slept in sleeping bags in the gym. Mm. The first night was get to know the other teams from around Europe, i.e. drinking many beers. And as the night drew to a close, the Hull University team decided the centre circle of court one was where we would bed down. Not a great night's sleep was had, but not bad. Night two was slightly different. The tournament winners would be determined the following day. So from around 10 o'clock onwards, the keener players started sloping off. The good news was that meant A, the queue at the bar was minimal, and B, as someone unlikely to play the following day, I could drink even more frothy beer than the previous night. And I represented Hull University at beer drinking. The evening drew to a close, and being worse for wear, I wobbled off to the centre circle of court one once again to bed down. Too late and drunk to find out where everyone else was, I took pole position. Next morning, I was rudely awakened by my best mate gently kicking me whilst taking photos and laughing. It's worth mentioning at this point, I had no hearing in my left ear, which is why I hadn't heard two teams warming up at either end of the court for 20 minutes or heard the man sweeping the court 10 feet away. Sadly for me, this particular court was also overlooked by a balcony, packed now with spectators eagerly awaiting the first game, and I had to get off court. Having just awoken and not being quite together and not ready to step out of my sleeping bag, I caterpillared across the court in my sleeping bag to a polite ripple of applause.
Oh, well, lovely. That reminds me of the old gag. I can't remember who used to do this, possibly Mike and Bernie. He says his grandfather was killed at Custer's Last Stand. He said, my granddad got killed at Battle of Bull Run or whatever it was. He said, did he? He said, yeah. He said, was he a soldier? He said, no, he was camping in the field next door. He was asleep and got up to complain about the noise. It's almost on a par. So this is from a few weeks back. This is, I think, whatever this was, it was mangling sentences or something. So this is from our good correspondent, Steve. I met my now wife in the early 90s, and after a few weeks courting, as they used to say, the day finally came to unveil me to her unsuspecting family. There's plenty in there, actually. meet the parents. Her parents were fantastic, and emboldened by my success, I readily agreed to join my beloved on a visit to her nan and granddad. It wasn't too long a drive, just up the A6 to Barton the Clay from Luton. Introductions complete, the telly was put on, albeit a bit loud. You know how the mature like to ask the question and then do whatever they were going to do anyway. Are you too cold, they say, as they crank up the heat at a furnace level anyway. He's enjoying this. Anyway, after the news just started, and it was that day that the day became a bit weird. It was clear that the newscaster was not popular in the family. The poor man trying to read the news was ripped to pieces with criticisms of his clothes, his haircut, his speech, anything really, including his very existence. Finally, my wife's nan delivered the coup de grace. Look at him. Look at him. He thinks he's body every self. I was confused. Had I heard that wrong? He's body every self. I perhaps suspected a different family customs and traditions, but their own language, he's every body self. I was then asked if I agreed, and partly driven by solidarity from my wife and partly by fear, solemnly, I did agree. Yeah, he does. He thinks he's every body self. 30 years later, with two children, both in their 20s, when we look at the TV and see something perhaps overly preening, simpering or just generally annoying, everyone takes up the cry, look at him, he thinks he's everybody self. Thank you, Steve. That, yeah, his phrase is unique to your family. My old man, of course, you know, Gogglebox had just harnessed what everyone did. Shouting at the telly for years. He didn't particularly like Ernie Wise. I didn't like Malcolm Wise full stop, to be absolutely honest. Like the idea of one apparently did. Nah, I don't know, soppy, daft, he used to say. But he did say, but they wear beautiful suits. I'll say that for him. They were beautiful suits. And even in their classic, you know, at the end of program banter is to say, lovely suits. It's the only thing going for him then, too. Lovely suits, right? But his real anger was held for the newscaster, Kenneth Kendall. Whatever Kenneth Kendall was bringing us, my old man was like, hark at him. Hark at him. Hark at him. What did you say it like that for? Oh, and now the news on BBC One, read by Kenneth Kendall. Oh, leave. I'll turn it over. Put on the ITA, as he called ITV. Put on the ITA. Kenneth Kendall. Now, irrational dislikes of celebrities would certainly entertain. But my old man could not bear the newscaster Kenneth Kendall. Say quick, have you got it there, Peps?
This is from Jez. It says, you may recall in an early, some may say, seminal edition of the show, you made the bold assertion that ice hockey was the sole user of the terms rink and puck. Yeah. Hard to disagree until now. Mm-hmm. Preparing dinner on Saturday, I was, for once and inexplicably, reading the instructions on frozen spinach. Time stood still as my eyes fell upon the unforgettable instruction to count out the required number of spinach pucks.
No! Pucks of spinach?
Yes.
Really?
Thereby bringing to the conclusion a mystery.
I suppose so.
Well, they are. They are those hard little nuggets of spinach.
You can give yourself a frozen Yorkshire puddings, but nobody ever says the Yorkshire puck, do they? thank you very much indeed. Very diligent of our listeners. We can all plump up a cushion because this is a beautifully written, interesting meeting with a long-time saint of this show. Oh. So, here we go. This is, forgive me, because I didn't know, usually for my eyesight these days, make these about, you know, Cilla Vision. Do you know what Cilla Vision is?
No.
Cilla Vision. Cilla Black, when I was at ITV for years and years at London Weekend, used to have her own font on the auto cue. Now, everyone's auto cue is usually about an inch high as it rolls up. But Cilla couldn't even see that. So terrible was her eyesight. So they invented a brand new font. It was each word, each letter would be over 2 inches, 2.5 inches high. And that was only for her. And it was called Cilla Vision.
Whoa!
Wow.
It did, yeah. When anyone needed, because you could have it smaller, say a little larger than that. And so not Cillavision, I hope, but Cillavision is an actual inside.
Well, give her credit then, because she could only have had two words on there at a time.
Yeah, it's very difficult, but she did. Cillavision, she used to work in. Now, I haven't got this in Cillavision, but I'll get through it as best I can. And this is incentives from Big Paul. You'll like this, everyone. There's plenty in this. As a mollycoddled teenager, I never had to bother with paper rounds or Saturday jobs. Before we go any further, Saturday job, Peps, you had a Saturday job?
Yes, boots at Lakeside.
Did you?
Photographic department, yeah.
On a
Sunday. I started when they started Sunday trading, because it was time and a half and fewer hours.
But you're like a tail gunner there. The people who came in and said, are my photos back? And you had to be the one to tell them no.
Best job in the world.
No.
Oh.
Really?
No, it's brilliant. Because also what you really did was the bloke in the lab, Nick, used to go, there's a brilliant top picture. So he'd put the really embarrassing picture top so that you would open the packet and say, are these yours?
Oh,
and a very well-to-do couple would be there with a picture on the beach or something on their holiday. Or a nudie shot, you know, from a lad's hotney.
See, that's where I'm afraid. That's where my mind went when you said an embarrassment. Would people do? How could you possibly?
Oh, lads' holidays. Good grief, boys.
Oh, I know.
Take cameras out of your trousers.
You're right there.
There was a lot of that went on.
Naive of me. And you weren't responsible for putting on those little oval stickers saying this one didn't come out.
No, sadly, they did that in the actual lab, which was behind us.
Oh, I see.
But again, yes, that was always...
But I'd have thought, as I say, the ire of the public when they come in say, but you said these would be back Monday, there'd be an hour. I couldn't
But then I was a 16, 17-year-old. I'd go, oh, I'll have to speak to the supervisor. And then I'd run away.
They used to, in Southwark Park Road boots, they used to hate me walking in. Maybe other reasons for it. But they, I used to take so many pictures. And I'm not joking, I came home from 2 weeks in Disney World once with 74 rolls of film. 74 rolls of film. And of course, they would say, could you walk around for an hour? Because they had to write an individual slip for every one of those.
Yes.
Every one. And then pop it into the little bag with the window in it.
The bonus of my job was that it was also the music department, so I had to change the charts over on a Sunday night, ready for Monday morning. Get advance notice of the charts.
That's better.
That was exciting.
Did you ever play the piano on the till, or was it electronic till by then?
Oh, it was electronic tills, yeah.
Anyway, but we're getting away from it. Perhaps we can't always be dragged into your career as the artful dodger.
Oh, I'd forgotten the other thing was checking someone's £20 note if they thought they were a bit snooty.
And how did you
check? I'll just go and check this.
Did you?
Just to make them a bit
uncomfortable. I love it when they hold it up to the light. They don't know what they're looking for.
You had a pen that you could scribble on it.
Pen, yeah. All right, here we go.
Such powers.
Sorry, Big Paul, because this is a belter.
Yes.
By the way, the only Saturday job I had, because he says his mollycoddle didn't need one, I didn't.
But you went straight to work.
I was at 14, I was at work, and we promised we were going to get straight to this email. But the only job I had, because I lived right by the railway arches, and I described earlier on in Mombasa Street, there were all nefarious businesses and various things going on. And my old man said to me when I was about 8 or 9, you want a job? Saturday morning pictures for an hour? And I said, a job? No, I don't. Go on, you get a couple of quid out of it for your records. And George, over the fruit arch. And my job, I used to sit on a stall. And George said, now look, these big trays of tangerines and Zatzumas and stuff. He said, have a look at them. Now, any that's a bit mouldy, any that's a bit, it looks like they're going off in the tray, yeah. See that tissue paper, get a square of the tissue paper and wrap it up in that and put it back, right? I know. And that was my job. Now, it didn't occur to me.
It busted wide open.
And that's why, I don't suggest for a second we're talking about Waitrose here, or even Aldi or any of the other supermarkets, but when you see a tray of tangerines, there are only two or three that have tissue paper on them. Now, I don't know if 10-year-olds are out there still spotting the mouldy ones. That was my job. Any of you see this, if you're going a bit off, put a bit of tissue paper around them and put them back. Now, that was a job, wasn't it? On another show, we'll get round to why when you get a box of chocolates, only two or three of them have foil wrappers on. Ooh.
Mm.
What's so special about the lime barrel? Why can't it be naked like the others? So Paul writes, as a mollycoddled teenager, I never had to bother with a paper round or Saturday jobs. That is until my dad got me one over Christmas, working for a neighbour's car upholstery company, £30 for a 50-hour week, in a converted 16th-century stable. I was told I had to do it. It was a car upholstery arch. We're not talking about a honeysuckle-covered structure here that would sit nicely in an Anna Sewell novel. No, it was literally a condemned building with no heating, no running water, and no toilet, but somehow managed to sustain quite a successful business. On the second day of my employment, Bob, the owner, announced that a celebrity was bringing his Rolls-Royce in for some work. A celebrity? Yes, and that celebrity was Bernie Winters.
Oh,
I was well aware of Bernie's impressive catalogue of work, but my colleagues were less than impressed, confusing him with Bernard Manning. Anyway, later that morning, a cream Rolls-Royce came a-crunching down the access road and pulled up alongside of me. A big smiley face, the colour of a conker, suddenly appeared through the window and said, "Hello, son, I'm Bernie." I answered, "All right, Bernie, I'm Paul. I'm a big, big fan." Which was complete and utter fabrication, but what else could a 16-year-old gangly prog rock fan say to a light entertainment celebrity? Luckily, he seemed not to sense I was frying him up a right old porky. After a brief chat with Bob, Bernie was whisked off to his home, leaving myself and my two colleagues in charge of cleaning his car. One lad went to the nearby river to fill some buckets. Remember, we had no running water. And the other set about cleaning the interior whilst I loitered in the workshop by the kettle, which I had to repeatedly boil just to get some warmth. By the third boil, the lad cleaning the interior appeared, carrying what appeared to be a sizable sheet of dry wallpaper paste that he had just peeled off the rear seats. Do you know what it was? It was congealed Schnorbitz drool.
Oh!
This obviously confused him, as far as he was aware, Bernard Manning didn't have a big slobbery dog. When Bob the boss returned, he explained he'd told Bernie the job would take a week, when in fact it was a 20-minute work at best. But it meant he had the use of the swanky car for 7 days.
No.
The new boy was given the job of simply gluing back a door seal into place. For 15 minutes, I sat in Bernie's car, playing with the electric windows, fixing the seal, and going through all the hidey holes, looking for something with which I might blackmail him one day. Big Paul, this is a great email. Once the seal adhesive had worked its magic, I slid out of the car, but I didn't get very far. I appeared to be attached to the seat, and so, with both hands on the doorframe, yanked myself out, accompanied by the sound of ripping material. Ladies and gentlemen, the screwdriver I had casually placed in my back pocket had pierced Bernie Winters' Rolls-Royce's fine Connolly leather with a resultant L-shaped rip left in the upholstery. A gangly 16-year-old prog rock fan had done it, and attaining full panic mode, I went into it in a split second. I didn't tell anyone, so I decided to glue the piece of wayward seating back into place. I plonked myself in the passenger seat and set about the task. Remarkably, the leather seemed to fit back together perfectly, helped by a pool of adhesive I had placed beneath it. Sadly, my satisfaction turned to terror when I realised I'd put the screwdriver that had caused the damage back in my back pocket, and, I promise you, Groundhog Daylight tore a second gash in the leather, this time in the passenger seat. All of my sweat had been used up by this time, but I set about the task of gluing the second back seat back together, and despite the panic, the repair was seamless again. I really had dodged a bullet, it seemed. By the end of the day, I returned home in the Rolls with Bob, who congratulated me on a job well done. His only complaint was that the smell of adhesive in the car was slightly overpowering. Little did he know, he was sitting on a sizable portion of it. 7 days later, Bernie Winters appeared at the workshop to pick up his car, polished, cleaned of all dog juices, but still smelling a little of solvent. But he was chuffed with the work. I was a little surprised when he remembered my name. He called me over and gave me a crisp £5 note, ignoring my two colleagues who had done all the heavy lifting in the job. Perhaps crime does pay, and I subsequently recounted the meeting with Bernie Winters to a girlfriend, but she was having none of it. Me meeting Bernie Winters, why, the idea was preposterous. However, a few months later, I was crossing the road in Barnet. We approached the zebra crossing and a cream Rolls-Royce pulled up to let us across. As we ambled over, a little beep crept out of the car horn. We looked around as the window rolled down and a big, shiny face the colour of a conker appeared. It was Bernie, and he even remembered my name again. Oh. We exchanged niceties and went our separate ways. Bernie in his cream roll with the secretly patched up seats, and me with my eyebrow satisfyingly raised like that of a man who had just been name-checked by Jeffrey Hammond at a Jethro Tull gig. I've told this story a few times over the years to little or no interest, but now, 42 years later, I've been able to share this story again with a salon that will surely appreciate its social importance. My work now is done. Big Paul.
Oh, Big Paul.
What a tale. What a tale. Bravo. Now, normally, we don't encourage that kind of highways and byways length on a tale, but every single syllable, we had to be jealously watched. What a great story. Yeah, it's ruining the car with it. The second time he does it, I actually thought, oh no, he did it not once, but twice. Anything very quick to finish with there, Peps?
Oh, I'm not sure I can follow that, but this is one
that... I threw it at you.
Yes, thanks. Well, Sean has to follow this.
It's a
question a while back of someone with your name.
Oh, okay.
When I was approaching my teenage years, I had a go at the old pastime of a message in a bottle. I wrote my name and address on a scrap of paper and chucked it in the sea at Herne Bay.
Mm.
One day, a strange letter with a Dutch stamp and postmark plopped onto the doormat addressed to me. It was a reply to my seafaring message. It explained that the bottle had pitched up in the Netherlands, and it gave me a few details about the life where my new pen pal lived. When I got to the end of the letter, I noticed with surprise it was signed by Johan Kok, which is the Dutch translation of my name,
no.
Sean Cook. Slightly roundabout, Sean being the Irish form of John. I never met him, nor his brilliantly named brother, Wilco Kok. But I do find it peculiar.
There's a very famous Dutch singer called Wilhelm Palm de Kok. His name's Palm de Kok. But that is the third Dutch story of this extravaganza. The third Dutch story. And I think that's plenty of Dutch stories. Normally, at the end of this Saturday show, the klaxon goes and next week's subjects are announced. Now, we are so far behind with all your emails, and they are all belters. You know, even Keithy Baby has had to take his place in the queue. So what we're going to do on the next show is bring you up to date with all the others.
Clear the decks.
So that's what we'll do next time. There will be no new subjects. Unless you want to get in touch about anything, don't stop. Look back over the subjects, but we've got to clear some of this backlog, because every single one of them are our children. So, Phil, if you want to play the theme tune.
1, 2, 3, 4. Treehouse. Climb up, go in, let's cozy down. Wave goodbye to that silly frown as we chase our cares away.
In the treehouse.
The fire's on, it's warm inside. We guarantee you'll be satisfied as we laugh the day away.
In the treehouse.
Take it away, Danny!
Always do, the great Wisby. Thank you, of course, to Johan van der Palm de Kok. No, Louise Napoleon Pepper. Phil Wilding, who shoves this show together as soon as we leave the stage. Everyone over there at Something Else for giving us the platform. But as you can hear via Big Paul, it's always chiefly yourselves. I'll see you in midweek.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.